Good afternoon and welcome to HR Examiner Radio. And except this isn't HR Examiner Radio, this is HR Tech Weekly, One Step Closer with Stacey Harris and John Sumter. And today is our 89th show. Stacey, how are you?
I'm doing well. And we're in the same room today, John.
Yeah, this is some sort of magic. Usually we're bi-coastal and now we're unicoastal. This is a unicoastal broadcast. So what's in the pile today, Stacey?
Well, since we've been traveling and I've got the opportunity to actually talk about this in person, we have this afternoon. We've got quite a bit of stuff in the bag today. The reason we're both out here on the West Coast is Oracle Open World was this week. There's a lot of conversation about Oracle Open World and some things that Larry has announced and some things that the HR Systems Group has announced. There is some updates from your trip to Achievers last week, which we didn't get through everything because you were still going to it. A couple updates from the ADP event that I went to last week in a little bit further south from here. We have some interesting news about HiQ Labs, which is someone you've worked with previously. I haven't had an opportunity. And then on a group that I worked with, NetDimensions and Exact Learning have made some relationships together. And then there's a great updates from Ceridian on new team members in their organization. And then we get lots of stuff to talk about, things like benchmarks and what organizations are doing with benchmarks and what organizations are doing with the growing problem of bots and technology with bots and how they're fighting with each other all of a sudden. So it should be a fun conversation.
So this is going to be great. I hope we get to all of it. So let's start with last week at ADP. What did you learn? You were in Pasadena, right?
I'm in Pasadena, yes. So a little bit farther south from here. Pasadena and the ADP event was great. Not only was the weather fabulous and the town very nice, but ADP really, I think, spent most of the time with the analysts. They had a group of analysts at their innovation labs out there, sharing not only where they're at today, but where they're planning on going. So we talked a lot about their continuing investment in their payroll technologies in the cloud. They are continuing to expand the regions that they're planning to work on from a payroll perspective. They are truly, I think, the only real organization out there that can deal with, I think, 140 different countries now. It's pretty crazy the number of countries that they can handle from a payroll perspective. They are still using technology that is sort of a mixture of SAP and theirs for many of those GlobalView groups. But they're also investing in the user experience for GlobalView, which is that product. So they're also investing in new user experiences for their Vantage product, which I was quite impressed with. And then we also spent time talking about their benchmarking capabilities. They are now actually at a point where they're able to sell and make a real business for benchmarking across different HR metrics. So those were probably the big things. And then they spent a little bit of time with virtual reality and a new voice recognition tool that they're working on.
So the ADP story is an incredible story. This is like the company that owned a hot dog stand on every street corner is now slowly and carefully showing people that it's a 5-star restaurant.
Yeah.
And that kind of transformation in a traditional brick and mortar shop, the only other people who are coming close to doing that are the folks at Ceridian, and Ceridian doesn't operate at the same scale as ADP does. So this is a miraculous business turnaround story on top of being a very interesting plain old technology story. So I'm jealous I didn't get to go.
It's hard to sort of imagine the amount of clients that they're dealing with, but their Workforce Now product, just that product, right, which is just organizations really, 2,000 and below, probably 1,000 and below, 70,000 organizations that they're working with payroll and benefits and some level of core HRMS in there.
So this is one of the things that's not always apparent in marketing. We were at Oracle Open World this week, and if you just listened to the pure marketing, you'd go, well, one of the biggest companies in the enterprise space is Workday, but Oracle's got to be 100 times the size of Workday. And ADP, 70,000 clients, and you know, something like 25% of all payroll goes through ADP.
And they actually made a comment that 90% of all U.S. employees at one point in time in their life have been paid through ADP.
That's astonishing, and it's impossible to understate how big a company that is that handles that level of cash flow. And so these are the giants, and the giants are not sitting still.
No, they're not sitting still. And I think what's more important is that the race this right now may feel like it's about cloud or even about artificial intelligence, but the race, at least from where ADP is sitting, is data. I mean, ADP has enough data that they tell the government what's happening in the labor market. Right. ADP has more data than almost anybody else on the HR front in the market. And that's something for everyone to really think about, is who's going to own the data at the end of the day. And that's definitely where Oracle of the World is thinking about right now.
Well, and so the interesting thing is there are like Equifax has perhaps an equivalent amount of data. They have they have maybe 40 million transactions every pay period that pass through their things. The problem with the data at that scale is that company X and company Y and company Z in Montana and company D in New York City don't call the same job the same thing. So the idea that what's there is an easy to use repository of standardized data that anybody could make a lot of sense out of, not so much. Not so much. There's a lot of work, and there have been a lot of projects where people threw their hands up in failure because there's not an easy way to create a Rosetta Stone for all of that data and make it apples to apples.
Which is why Equifax and ADP are both, I think, on pretty large scales hiring economists and data scientists to work within their organizations. And you're seeing them hiring them left and right now.
It's a good time to be an economist. I don't think there ever was a good time to be an economist, but this is it.
Right now it is it. Now, Oracle OpenWorld sort of doing, I think, something a little different with that data conversation. So they don't really care so much about inside of HR, how much, one role matches another role. What Oracle's doing is talking about adaptive technology, which the focus on that is more about getting a complete profile of a person. And right now it's a marketing conversation. They're using their Eloqua that they had purchased not too long ago, marketing tools. But the idea essentially is to create profiles of each human being in the world that they can profile and share that data from a marketing and employee perspective down the road. And so they don't really care, I think, if it matches up from a benchmark. I mean, there's definitely benchmarking components that they want to do down the road. But I think the bigger picture is helping you understand the life of that person from all the various data points that they can pull together.
That's interesting. That's unnerving to anybody who's a little concerned about the potential outbreaks of fascism in the Western world. And so it's a fascinating time because the technology is taking us right to the place where a very authoritarian government could make maximum use out of the technology. And at the same time, that same depth of data promises unheralded, unparalleled freedoms. So it's a tricky time to be alive, I think.
It is. And we have to really, sort of consider, the difference between sort of a government owning that data versus a company owning that data, right? And then the company is trying to leverage that data from a profits perspective. And so, when we think about what are particularly my son's generation, right, the next generation, Dan, they're more than willing to give up their data to get something back in return, a better shopping experience, a car that meets their needs better, a tool set that fits their requirements better. Then that corporation is not a government entity. So where that data resides and how they're going to use it is all driven by their profits. And I think there are people who would say that that's safer than being in government hands.
So as far as I know, there aren't any examples of large data holders who haven't had the government come and ask for the data.
Yeah.
Right. And so one of the things in the United States is the government is prohibited from collecting certain kinds of data about mm-hmm. people, but they are not prohibited from demanding that companies turn that very same data over. And so all of the telecommunications companies from Microsoft to AT&T have been wrangling with the fact that the government has the ability to put a gag order on their requests for all of the data about all of the customers under Homeland Security or NSA or some large thing. And so those big companies just look like collection tools for the government to me sometimes.
Well, I think that's going to be the ongoing conversation, particularly around regulations and requirements. And when you're talking about a U.S. government versus a European government, and the new, you know, the fact that safe harbor is sort of no longer the way we're thinking about privacy, but we're doing the more European-based model, and all the vendors have to be thinking about this as they're moving forward in this path.
I don't get the feeling that most HR departments are thinking about this. I sat through at Oracle Open World. I sat through a really interesting presentation from IBM on their C-suite survey, and they interview 5,000 C-level executives, including 600 or 800 HR C-level executives, and privacy and security were not on the radar of the HR people that they investigated. It was the only place where the HR people were out of sync with the rest of the organization.
And I will say that in our CRC survey this year, we asked about things like data privacy. How well do you think you're handling it? And right now, like 56% of the organizations feel they're very effective at managing it, which surprised me when we got that data back. So I think that you're right, that the HR organization at this point isn't as concerned about it. Now, what's interesting is that both Oracle and ADP, I think ADP might get to market faster with this, but both Oracle and ADP this year demoed experiences that were voice driven in their technologies. ADP particularly is really moving forward in this direction pretty rapidly. Oracle was able to demo it in their sort of beta testing models, which you're probably looking at maybe a year and a half down the road probably. But when you really think about the amount of data right now that we're capturing, it's all stuff that someone has to enter. Someone has to think about what they're putting. There might be activity data about how often you're working and when you clock in and clock out, but it's still something generally that you're pushing a button. I think the voice recognition, which means someone's listening to your conversation all the time, like Siri is now with your Apple phone or your Alexa Echo, if you have that, that's, I think, going to change the dynamics a bit more about how much data they're capturing as well.
I do too. It is something that I noticed. Oh, Alexa is listening in the background.
Yeah. Yep.
The thing that I heard about last week is there is a large body of call center toolset that, on hearing your voice, starts to make personality assessments. So when they say this phone call may be recorded for training purposes, you think, training another human being, they mean training the machine learning system to understand you. And so in the big call centers, what they found is that people who are alike have better transactions. And so the phone analysis of your personality is done to route you to the customer service person who will get done with you the fastest. And you can get badly tagged in one of those systems, and there's no recourse when you get badly tagged in one of those systems.
Well, that was one of the articles that me and you had talked about. We pulled up was the article about the fighting bots on Wikipedia, and it was a great, I think, story that you had found where the bots are fixing and editing the Wikipedia article.
So,
right?
So in Wikipedia, the way that Wikipedia works is somebody writes it, and then there's an argument about whether or not it's right, and it's corrected and recorrected and recorrected, and then it's done. And when humans do it, that correct and recorrect cycle goes through 5 iterations, and then it's finished. When the bots do it, it goes through 110 iterations, And so you can imagine Wikipedia, which everybody uses, having underneath the surface that you see when you go to look at it, this constant war between bots who are editing little things and then re-editing, and fighting back and forth so that the core text of Wikipedia is always a little fuzzy because of this ongoing battle.
And the whole concept of bots that are tagging you, right? So just think about warring bots tagging you in different ways with different personalities. I mean, one of the things that Larry demoed on his, you know, big opening speech and keynote for Oracle was chatbots that were live and making changes, you know, and being able to sort of help someone go through marketing and a sales and an HR update on their systems. Then if that system's continuing to learn, it's continuing to make changes, continuing to make assessments about who you are.
Well, so I think one of the really big issues in the next 10 years is, what do you do if you think the computer's wrong? And who do you tell? And how do you get it changed? And do you, right? I know that when spreadsheets first emerged, people who use spreadsheets had this incredible advantage because they would show up in the meeting with something that looked like it was printed, right? It was on paper in black and white. And so they could go, yeah, this is it, and jam their finger down on it. And won a lot of arguments because the computer said it was like this. Now you're going to get all sorts of recommendations and all sorts of characterizations from machines, and you won't know how the algorithm works. The people who wrote it don't know how it works.
Well, because it's learning. It's changing.
It changes itself. It's not auditable how it learns and how it changes. And so the odds that it's wrong are meaningful, and there's no recourse there. There's no consumer credit kind of general authorization that says when a computer makes a determination, here's the protest mechanism.
Well, not yet. Now, we have seen, and we think we talked a little bit about last week, that there are already starting to be some lawsuits against organizations, artificial intelligence, decision-making processes. So
it's the early days, but I don't see the path, right? I don't see the path.
It'll be interesting because, you know, we have governance models for almost every decision that comes out of our organizations, particularly if they're large global organizations, right? So governance becomes a very important component of all the decisions you're making. I think possibly, you know, if things follow the trajectory they followed with other types of sort of processes, and this is the process at the end of the day, right, that I think we will see a governance model for artificial intelligence come about.
But let me ask you this sort of practical scenario. I'm an up-and-coming, young, recent college graduate. I have an engineering degree. I want to go into marketing. And the computer has evaluated me and said I'm a great engineering person and I wouldn't be any good in marketing. Who do I go to talk about that? Do I go to HR? Is there going to be anybody in HR who actually knows anything other than this is what the machine said, there's nothing you can do about it?
Well, today, no, but I think there will be eventually an artificial intelligence department, a function that manages the artificial intelligence of every corporation, just like we need. Most organizations today are starting to create data management roles, right? Someone who manages the data within the organization. Well, ultimately, that person will probably be in charge of, I would assume, any artificial intelligence that's also running in your organization, because data and the artificial intelligence go hand in hand, right?
So sometimes those things happen that each individual operating department gets that function, and sometimes it's centralized. Yeah. Which do you think it'll be?
That I can't tell you, because right now, I mean, we're seeing more and more HR functions going to a central function, right?
Right.
But I think that's because they're basically not strategic and they're basically being seen as administrative functions. And so we're seeing the more strategic stuff continue to be more regionalized. If this is considered administrative, it'll be centralized. If it's considered strategic, it'll be by division, department, or region.
Got it. Good answer. Yeah. So what else we got?
Well, I think the other thing that, you know, there's a couple of other business or sort of vendor announcements I think are worth sort of noting. We should note that at Oracle Open World, we did also hear a lot about the LMS in Oracle HMS Cloud's new release 12. So they are continuing to update their LMS. And I think for those who are most interested in this space, they should know that they have accelerated their work in that area. And so where they previously had said they would be probably 3 years out before they had a complex LMS, we're probably looking more like a year and a half. That, I think, is going to have a big impact on the talent management space. And the complex learning management systems right now, like Saba, Cornerstone, some smaller guys like NetDimensions, who are sort of currently being held by most large organizations as their primary LMS. When Oracle and the Workdays are strong enough is probably not quite the right word, but when they're well enough to have an LMS that's complex and can handle everything from classroom training to education to tracking of what, you know, resources you need in an event, then you're going to have real competition for these LMS industry leaders who have basically been the only option for organizations who do a lot of training their organizations. So NetDimensions is one of those. NetDimensions made a partnership this week with Exact LCMS. And Exact is a learning content management system. And I think you're going to see more and more of the standalone LMSs who have a little bit of talent management, but not sort of a big full suite, who are really going to start to connect, acquire, pair up with as many learning content tools and extended learning organizations as they can to try and make sure that they have something to bolster this market when the big ERPs have their LMSs.
So one of these days, I'd like to devote one of our shows to your understanding of the LMS world, because I'm a little vague about some things. Mm-hmm. For instance, I see very clever tools being developed that are designed for call centers and sales forces that you couldn't possibly use other places of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's part of the LMS world or if that's an adjunct, because I don't really understand. My view would be that an LMS is a comprehensive management tool for all learning inside of an organization. That'd be my out of the gate thing. But I don't think that's right. I think it's often a housing for compliance related information.
Yeah, I'd say if you really took a look at LMSs today as they stand, and the standalone LMSs, right? Not as many of them that are attached to the talent management suites right now. Standalone LMSs today that have made it really, you know, sort of have built a business around compliance and regulations are very much focused on tracking compliance certifications over and over again. The idea of performance improvement, which is sort of what you're talking about,
right?
The on-the-job training, the performance improvement elements, right? That requires a connection to the talent conversation, right? So without something that has a conversation about what type of job you have and what type of work you're doing, the LMS is really nothing more than an education tool. And I think that's the big differentiator. You see, that's why even like NetDimensions has created some elements of a performance management component in their LMS, even though it's primarily their learning management system, because you can't do performance support without understanding the job role. But the challenge is that to do really good performance support, you also need to understand the work environment. And that requires your workforce management system. And then you also need to understand the culture. So that requires whatever you're doing on the HR side. And that's the challenge for many of the standalone LMSs is, can they bring it all together? And I think, you know, right now they're struggling with that in the market. What we're not seeing come into the ERPs and not coming into the big HRMM suites right now is what we call extended learning. So learning for your clients and customers. And that's the space that you're seeing that the standalone LMSs right now are continuing to increase their numbers in.
A complicated world.
Very complicated world. Yeah. And it's not as simple as everybody thinks. A complicated LMS does not take a year to put out if it's good.
That's great. So next.
Well, basically, the other article, news announcement, whatever you want to call it this week, was Ceridian has a new CFO. I think it's worth noting. We do talk a little bit about sort of changes in the market, and this was a big announcement that came out, I think, to all the analysts, was that for many of the analysts probably know Lois, who was their CFO for many, many years.
5 years.
Yeah, helped them through the transition with Dayforce. So It in the announcement, basically, it sounds like they're trying to consolidate all of their executives in their Toronto offices. And the new person, let me see if I can get his name appropriately. I probably will not say this right, but the new person is Arthur Gittigen?
Arthur Gittigen.
Arthur Gittigen, I think that's how it's said, but I could be wrong. So, and it sounds like he used to be a co-worker of David Ossip's, the CEO's in the work brain days.
That's right.
He's in the Toronto area. And so they sort of put a nice acknowledgement of Lois's efforts, but it sounds like she's going to be staying in the location she's at, didn't want to move to Toronto, and they're consolidating the executive levels in Toronto.
Yep. It's an interesting time for Ceridian because they are taking off with the Dayforce model, and so this is an acceleration move, I'm sure.
Yeah, they're making a lot of changes there.
So what are you learning in the survey? You're now very close to unveiling the formal results at HR Tech in a couple of weeks. What are the real secrets? Who's really getting screwed here?
Who's on top, who's on bottom? All right. So the survey is not about just the user experience stories. I know a lot of the vendors think that it is, but that really is not the only thing that we cover in it. A couple of things I think that'll be interesting for those who sort of maybe haven't paid attention to the annual HR system survey previously is we are seeing more small businesses and mid-market organizations adopting all levels of HR technology that you wouldn't have expected beyond payroll, right? Beyond core HRMS. We're also seeing, I think, a lot more focus this year on benefits. So there's a lot of data this year on the benefits space. And a lot of focus on payroll transitions. So we actually saw a slight increase this year. This will not sort of giving away too much, but a slight increase this year in cloud payroll, which was not expected because I think people are moving to the cloud a little bit faster in payroll. In many cases, because of things like what ADP is doing, what Oracle is doing with their payroll solutions, really pushing them to be cloud. And then organizations like NGA who are trying to help SAP get theirs to the cloud.
So what's, in your mind, what's the benefit of being a cloud payroll system?
Well, and I don't know if there's a benefit per se. I think the real benefit is that once you sort of get to a technology that is a little bit more flexible in their ability to sort of work on mobile environments, and you get to a technology where you can merge databases a bit easier because a lot of the on-premise payroll solutions were customized so much that you can't actually roll that data up into good reporting. With the cloud, you can't customize. And so the idea is that you have all these databases that at least will match on some level and you can aggregate them up. What you're going to get is better reporting and with the mobile capabilities, better access to the payroll information.
Is it starting to seem to you like one size fits all is stupid?
Well, one size fits all when it comes to payroll. There are a lot of people who says that it will never be possible, right? But I think companies are more alike than they think today. I think there's probably 80% standardized and 20% that's not. And so the 20% that's not is very industry specific or very business specific. And I think the vendors who are doing this work are like little mice with their feet running, trying rapidly to figure out how they can give flexibility to that 20%, because those are people who are never going to move. They can't get it.
So you know, 20% is where 80% of the results happen.
I know.
Right,
I know.
Right. And so saying things are 20% different is...
And it's the most important stuff.
It's the most important 20% that they're different in. And I think this is the hidden flaw in SaaS in general, is that the idea that you can have one way of doing it for everybody is harkens back to, you know, my favorite topic, maturity models.
Yeah. For me, you started that.
Right. So anyhow, one of the things I wanted to be sure to mention before we're out of time here is we've released a field guide to the HR Tech Conference. The HR Tech Conference will be the 4th through the 7th? I think it's the 4th through the 7th in Chicago, October. And at HR Examiner, we've put together a field guide that has 40 separate paths through the sessions that you can take by role, So in each of the major HR silos, and then by sort of occupation, are you a buyer, a competitor, an investor, or a practitioner? And with that is a sortable spreadsheet of all of the vendors who are at the show. And this will be the fastest way that there is for you to get through the planning of what you're going to do at HR Tech. So take a look. It's at hrtech2016.hrexaminer.com. There's a link right on the front page of hrexaminer.com.
And it's pretty cool. For those who are overwhelmed by the HR Tech environment, I highly recommend it because I've had a chance to go out there and look at it. And if I weren't briefing with a gazillion vendors at the same time, yeah, I'd have my path all figured out because of it.
So another great conversation, Stacey. Yeah. We should do this face-to-face at least once every 89 shows.
Yeah, it would work out quite well. Once I can get out this way.
Yeah. Or I could come to North Carolina.
Yep.
So thanks for tuning in, and thanks for making the time to do this, Stacey. You've been listening to HR Tech Weekly, One Step Closer with Stacey Harris and John Sumser. It's been great to have you with us.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Have a great day.